Milwaukee Journal Sentinel Milwaukee Bucks podcast. Joining you again on another Wednesday morning, and yet again, the Bucks have not lost since we last communicated. They are up to 15 wins in a row. They have not lost in a month. They are boring in all the right ways, and they're winning in a bunch of different ways. On Monday night, they won ugly. They've won very beautifully on Friday against the Los Angeles Clippers. They've dominated foes that they've needed to dominate, and it is getting awfully interesting. My name is J.R. Radcliffe, host of the Milwaukee Bucks Milwaukee Journal Sentinel podcast. On the other line is Matt Velasquez, Bucks beat reporter. He attends all of those Bucks games. There have been a lot of them lately at Fiserv Forum. And Matt, the streak is up to 15 games. There's a couple winnable games in the immediate future coming up for Milwaukee, and I don't know if people have gotten to this point yet, but they're going to get there soon. It's getting pretty interesting in terms of history. And if they circle that December 19th game against the Los Angeles Lakers, a team that is also 21-3 coming into Tuesday, that could be the 20th win in a row if it works out that way. That would tie the Bucks franchise record in 1971. That game has the potential to be the biggest regular season game we've seen in quite some time in Milwaukee. Are you looking ahead? Are you thinking about that Lakers game? Because it's certainly shaping up to be a pretty impressive matchup.
Oh yeah, definitely looking ahead a little bit. It's hard not to when you have the slate that the Bucks do. I mean, a Pelicans team coming in Wednesday night without Zion Williamson. I don't know about everybody else, but this doesn't get me all that excited. I know, like, Lonzo Ball and Josh Hart and Brandon Ingram and Drew Holiday, and that there's guys on that team that are interesting and intriguing pieces. But it just doesn't do it for me in the same way as next week's games do with Dallas and the Lakers coming to town. The Grizzlies will be interesting to see this Friday. I guess John Morant, he was week to week and he was out, but now he's back. So if we can see him, that'd be fun. Cleveland for a third time on Saturday, nothing to get too excited about unless you miss like John Henson or Matthew Dellavedova. Want to say hi. Definitely that Lakers game. Like, that's the marquee game now. Like, you know, sure, like, Dallas on Monday will be good, and Luka Mania will come to Fiserv Forum, and that'll be fun. But that Lakers game still, no matter what happens over the next few games, that Lakers game is one that definitely stands out. We'll see. You know, that one shapes up to be a great game between two really good teams. But, of course, the last time a really great L.A. team came to Fiserv Forum, it was not exactly close.
Yeah, we're definitely going to have to talk about that Friday night game against the Los Angeles Clippers. That was a sight to behold. Also one of the bigger regular season games in recent memory, and certainly one of the more entertaining for a Bucks fan's perspective. But just still sticking on the streak, the current streak, it's technically still the fourth longest streak in franchise history. One of those 16-game streaks spans two seasons, and I would personally argue that one should be stopped at 15 with the first playoff win that they had that year. So this would, in my mind, be tied for the third longest streak in Bucks history, the 20-game streak from 1971. Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, that was the title-winning Bucks team. That was, at the time, the longest streak in NBA history. It was bypassed the next year by none other than the Los Angeles Lakers, who have a 33-game winning streak, and I'm not sure. I don't know if anyone's going to catch that one. That's pretty ridiculous, but how much does this streak mean to the Bucks? And I ask that, obviously they want to win every game, but I ask that in terms of a situation where they would maybe be interested in resting guys, and I know that the individual players haven't had so many minutes that you need to be worried about anybody's production, like if they're getting overtaxed or whatever, but would they be a little bit more aggressive if a guy is a little dinged up because they've got this winning streak to take care of? Would they be a little bit more, I guess, would there be an added emphasis on continuing this streak as long as it exists, even though we're kind of getting into a middle part of the season where it might be a good time to start resting guys, giving guys breaks, making sure those nagging little injuries are taken care of, because there's obviously playoffs in the future here, and that's going to be where their emphasis is.
I think when it comes to the streak, the players would probably want to like stick it out to keep the streak going if it came to that. But if they have any injuries or they're nicked up in any way, and the medical staff and the coaching staff believe that rest is what they need, they're going to rest. like that's going to happen. You know, Mike Budenholzer has said recently, you know, we've talked about how, you know, Giannis doesn't like to miss games and how he always wants to play and how, you know, what's the conversation like if he tells him that maybe he needs to chill out and or in games where he's, you know, been subbed out for the rest of the game, you know, when the Bucks are clearly in control. You know, is Giannis trying to get back in there to do, you know, something else or get one last rebound to get a double-double or anything like that? And Bud kind of quashed that. It's like, no, there's been pretty firm control established by the coaching staff. So, you know, and the players trust them too. You know, they've said that in the past, including Giannis. So I think that if there was a situation where their long-term health dictated that they needed to sit, I think they would sit. I think during the streak, I mean, Chris Middleton missed some time with an injury during the streak. Obviously, it was before the streak really even started, like at the start of the streak. But then during it, George Hill sat a couple games, and Brooke Lopez sat a couple games. And, you know, they've had guys who have been out for various reasons. And, you know, if that's what needs to be done, it's going to be done because they all know that the big and main goal for this season is not anything that will happen in December or January or February. It's all about, you know, April, May, and June. So they're going to play it safe in that regard, and you know, maybe a little bit tougher, you know. But the positive thing for the Bucks is that they have been relatively healthy. You know, outside of the Middleton injury, you know, they've had a few guys miss a game or two here or there. But because they've been able to spread the minutes around, especially over a span of like four games after Thanksgiving, where, you know, I guess you take away the Cleveland game immediately after, but then you had the Charlotte game, and after that, you know, they played the Knicks, the Pistons, the Clippers. I mean, they won all those games by 20 points or more. And so when you're able to do that, and, you know, everybody plays, you know, over 10 minutes, and, you know, the starters are playing like basically half a game, that cuts down on the possibility of injury and the wear and tear and the mileage that you put on a guy. And then they had the weekend this past weekend where, you know, they didn't practice Saturday. They kind of gave them the opportunity to, you know, if guys wanted to come in to get a lift in or work on their bodies or their health, do some rehab work, get some shots up, like that was fine, but no formal practice, no rules there. And then on Sunday they had what they call a lockout day, which is, you know, no one is allowed to go to the training facility. Everyone needs to spend that day like with their families, with their friends, you know, go watch a Packers game, do whatever you're going to do. It doesn't matter. Just don't go to the training facility. And as far as Bud knew on Monday, they had pretty good, you know, follow through on that. Sometimes, you know, guys might try and break the rules a little bit here and there because they really want to get in the gym and do things. But as far as he knows, he goes, oh, I don't have any cameras there. Well, actually, there's probably a lot of cameras there. I just don't know how to use them. He's like, but overall, guys were leaving it alone. So I think that, you know, the streak isn't going to change the way the coaching staff and the medical staff approach injuries. But I know the guys, you know, as much as they are focused on one game at a time, I don't think anyone wants to see this end.
The crazy thing about, and I should say, first of all, if they went to the Packers game, that's cool, because some of the Packers came to the Monday night game against Orlando. Za'Darius Smith and others on the video board in attendance. The Bucks, like we just said, won that game ugly, but did win nonetheless. And I think CBS Sports had this headline, you know, the Bucks have won X number of games in a row. Imagine if they were shooting the ball well. And I think that's a really good point. Like, it's very difficult to explain how they've been so dominant, how they've won so many games in a row without hitting the same volume of three-pointers that made this team so dangerous last year. How would you explain that this Bucks team is able to sustain this high level of elite success without hitting those shots? And does it concern you that they don't hit those shots, even though obviously the results are still there?
I mean, I'm not concerned in any way. We can start with that. You know, right now, they're about average, I think 16th in the league, shooting 35.6% from three. That's like 1% lower than last year when they were let's check, because that's 1% lower than what they're allowing opponents to shoot right now. Opponents are shooting 36.5% on threes. But if you look at last year in terms of the Bucks' three-point shooting, it's actually better. So like last year, they were 35.3% over the course of the full season, which was league average. But again, like last year, where they're doing it is they have the best defense in the league in terms of defensive efficiency. They're the best in the league, just like last year, on their two-point field goal percentage. They're 58% on two-point shots. They're getting to the line a lot. They're not shooting free throws very well. A lot of that is Giannis hasn't been very good at the free throw line, but they're, you know, as a team, they're shooting the fifth most free throws in the league, while, you know, holding opponents to four fewer free throws per game. They have the best 2-point field goal percentage against. So teams are only shooting 44.3% on twos against them. And there's going to be games where they shoot really well from three. There's going to be games where they don't shoot as well. Right now, like I said, they're about average in terms of just being a little bit over 35%. But they've been winning. Like, they can win when they shoot well. They can win when they don't shoot well. And they still have the second best offense in the NBA in terms of offensive efficiency. They have the best defense. They're playing at the fastest pace in the league. They have, you know, the best effective field goal percentage. Like, they're still really good, you know, and maybe they just aren't a great three-point shooting team. They're a high-volume three-point shooting team, and they have a lot of three-point shooters who on any given night can get hot and get going. Brook Lopez definitely hasn't hit his stride yet in terms of three-point shooting, though he was 3 of 5 on Monday night. You know, Chris Middleton's obviously high-level three-point shooter. George Hill's been really good. Dante DiVincenzo, Pat Connaughton, Sterling Brown, Ersan Ilyasova, all those guys can shoot, you know, reasonably well from three-point range. Giannis is putting up a higher number of threes, and he's making like 32%, which is really good for him. But when he's putting up five threes a game, that's going to drag their average down a little bit as a group. But, I mean, if you told me that you know, on December 11th, that Brook Lopez would literally be the team's worst three-point shooter, you know, as far as guys who have attempted at least one shot, like, I would have thought you were crazy. But he's at 29.4%. It's not going to be that, you know, that way all season. He's not going to shoot under 30% from three for a season. It just doesn't make sense. And if he does, I'd be highly surprised. So I think that those numbers will, I think George Hill will come down. He won't be 51.6% all season. Like, he'll come down a little bit. You know, Brook Lopez will go up. And then everyone will kind of settle into the spots where they are. Maybe that's just not who they are. Like, they're not necessarily going to be a great three-point shooting team. They weren't a great three-point shooting team last year, and they still had a ton of success. The biggest thing is they need to be able to shoot the three-point shot well, especially wide-open shots well, when the playoffs come through. I think that was one of the biggest issues they had against the Raptors, where they got a ton of wide-open threes. I remember writing about it last spring where, you know, people were unhappy with their three-point shooting in that series, and it was like, well, what do you want to do? Like, they're getting wide-open shots, and they're missing them. Like, you know, and so if you can get wide open shots and make them at a decent rate, which they did last regular season and they so far have this year, you know, but you need to do it in that kind of microcosm of a 4-7 game playoff series. And that, because that's what matters most. And so if you can have a good rate that you make wide open threes at, and you can sustain that rate, you know, any team, in particular the Bucks, are going to give themselves chances to go really far and achieve really big things.
Let's talk about that Clippers game on Friday night, 119-91, and I don't think optically that score represents how dominant the Bucks were, particularly in the second half. They did lead by 40 points at one point with about 6.5 minutes to go. That would have been the third win by 40 or more points in their previous four games at the time, and it obviously didn't end up being that 40-point win, but nevertheless, a dominant showing against, again, a team that probably still factors heavily into the NBA Finals picture down the road. I mean, could be the Western Conference representative, very much the favorite in the preseason to win the West. Kawhi Leonard did play this time. They were at full strength, unlike the first time they met. Bucks sweep the season series. Just an incredible overall performance. What was the energy like in that building? On TV, it looked like the place was just electrified, and then it would be one of the more entertaining regular season games in recent memory. Maybe one of the more entertaining games this entire Bucks decade. But what was it like in there, and what did it compare to? Did it feel like the playoff atmosphere that it looked like on TV?
It was very loud at times. I'll say that. I think the Milwaukee fans really brought it. They knew that this was a big game, and yeah, everybody was in their seats ready to go at the time the game started. It had a kind of a playoff like feel to it. Obviously that kind of shifted a little bit as the Bucks just ran away with it. But the crowd was in it the whole game. It went from kind of that playoff kind of tension and excitement and you know, everybody being like maybe a little anxious and, you know, just kind of looking forward to what could happen, into being just a very festive, celebratory, you know, crowd that was cheering all the way to the end, was enjoying the way that, you know, Giannis went off in the second half, and, you know, everybody else was knocking down shots, and Pat Connaughton eventually finished the game, put the exclamation point on with a dunk. People were chanting happy birthday to Giannis. He was loving it. So it was a really good crowd, a really good atmosphere. Definitely not the kind of game I think anyone was expecting. I think you could have asked every person in that building, hey, are the Bucks going to be up by 40 today? You know, would you put $100 on it? And I don't think anybody would. But it was definitely something, I'll tell you that.
It's amazing to, I mean, obviously you're not going to dominate every team. You're not going to even teams that are not, not at that caliber. They've struggled to get by some lesser foes, but I feel like they're just better than the Clippers. And I know that you can't really judge that on one game or even two games, especially when one of the games was not at full capacity. But I feel like there are only, and maybe I felt this way last year too, there's only going to be one or two teams out there in the NBA that can beat this team in a 7-game series. Is that fair to say, or is it, there's just still too much, you know, too much variability to say that?
I think there's still enough variability that I wouldn't say that just yet. I think that there's really no question that the Bucks are better than the Clippers right now, but I don't think the Clippers are where they're going to be yet. I think that, you know, I think it was on just the day before the game on Thursday at the Al McGuire Center. Literally, that was the first time that Kawhi Leonard and Paul George practiced together. Like, they hadn't practiced together at all because of their injuries and the schedule until Thursday. So, you know, the Clippers are still figuring out who they are, while the Bucks very much know who they are and how they work, and they have that chemistry. It was funny before the game, our good friend Charles Gardner, who, you know, former member of this podcast, he mentioned, he asked Doc Rivers, kind of just starting off the pregame scrum, he was like, "So, Doc, is this the best team in the East that you're playing tonight?" And Doc kind of just laughed. He's like, "Yeah, I think so. I didn't know there was any type of debate going on." Like, just saying, like, "Hey, yeah, the Bucks have been the best team. They are the best team in the East right now. The record says it. Their, you know, offensive efficiency, defensive efficiency, their net rating, their point differential, their win streak. I mean, everything says that." So I think that, yes, right now, like, they are the best team. You know, maybe them and the Lakers, you know, because the Lakers, you know, have the same record and have been able to beat up on teams, maybe not in the same way, but they haven't played each other yet, so we can't definitively say which one is better. But I think that as the season goes on, I would expect the Clippers to be able to elevate their play and figure each other out and be ready come playoff time. I think they could very well be the best team in the league. You know, there's a possibility for that. It's not unreasonable, but they aren't that right now. And then I think in the East, you know, Philly, everyone expected before the year that they would be right up there with the Bucks. A lot of people picked them to go to the finals, to be this really high-level team. They haven't been that yet. They've had a bunch of changes to their roster, most notably Jimmy Butler and J.J. Redick on the way out, bringing in Al Horford and Josh Richardson, among others, and they still haven't figured themselves out. But I think over time, it's possible that they could. I think that, you know, there could be trades or teams could change. Boston, Toronto, Miami, even Indiana, like those teams, you know, have distanced themselves above the rest of the pack in the Eastern Conference. I think the top six teams we all know are pretty good or really good. And then everybody else is everybody else. But the Pacers will get Oladipo back at some point. That should help. Boston's just getting Gordon Hayward back now. Toronto has gone through a little bit of a rut, but they still have some talent. And, you know, I think these teams over the course of the season will improve. So we'll see come playoff time how everything shakes out and if anybody makes trades or what the full landscape is. But, you know, there should be some tests out there by the time the playoffs come around. Though I still think that the Bucks, as they're situated right now, are currently, you know, at least the best team in the East, if not the best team overall, clearly, and have the personnel and potentially the flexibility to make a move to, you know, still be that best team come the springtime.
Yeah, we'll have to talk about that in future podcasts, the potential direction they could take as we approach the trade deadline. But the Bucks will get a look at one of those teams you mentioned, other great teams in the East, the Philadelphia 76ers, their first look at the Sixers on Christmas Day, of course, in Philadelphia. And as big as that Los Angeles Lakers game is on the horizon, you mentioned it earlier, that Dallas Mavericks game with Luka Doncic, that's a very good team coming into Pfizer Forum a few days earlier. I believe that's on Monday of next week. So there are some pretty compelling matchups coming up. I'm curious about, wonder if you could give a progress report of Chris Middleton. He's been back, you know, with regular minutes at this point for the last three or four games. He's been shooting the ball very well. He's been very efficient. Maybe you don't see the overall gross scoring numbers as high as they have been. I'm not sure they need to be because of the depth that this Bucks team has, even better depth, I think, than last year. It might be arguable, but right now it feels like they've got legitimately 11 guys and even a couple more beyond that they could go to if they need to. But it seems like Middleton really does make this Bucks team better. And I know they won every single game without him when he was injured, but there is an added element to this team when Chris Middleton is on the floor. And I hope that's as evident to me to everybody as it is to me, because I know he still has his detractors. But are you seeing him a guy being at full strength and kind of as good as he's going to get, or do you think there's still some growth with him before this year is over even?
Yeah, I mean, I think he's been really good. I think overall, yeah, he looks like he's back to 100%. He has said, even after that first game he came back, that he feels 100%. Obviously, the Bucks wanted to take their time, get him, you know, kind of back ramped up minutes wise, but I think he's been fine. I mean, against the Clippers, he was 7 of 9 from the field, had a little bit of a slower start against the Magic, but then finished 4 of 10 on threes, and generally played well. I think his passing has been really solid. He has a pretty good rapport with a lot of the bigs on pick and rolls. His pocket passes have generally been pretty good. I'd have to check, but I think his turnovers in general are down. I think he's at 1.8 turnovers per game, which if we look at last year, let's see. Yeah, he was at 2.3, so he's down in terms of turnovers per game. He is playing a little bit fewer minutes right now, and he has fewer games under his belt. So maybe the per 36 numbers are closer. But overall, I think he's moved the ball well. He's not trying to do necessarily too much on offense, or at least he had that progression on Monday where maybe he was trying to do too much, wasn't getting any shots to fall early. But then later in the game, I mean, he's just finding his spots, trusting his teammates. Giannis's gravity is just so strong that when he drives, everyone goes in and Giannis is able to find him for open shots. Middleton actually, you know, he hit the, you know, kind of the dagger on Monday night. Giannis and Bledsoe did a pick and roll. Bledsoe with the pocket pass to Giannis. Giannis goes up and then no look to the corner for Middleton for a three. And that really, you know, that was definitely the one that sealed the game with about, I think, less than a minute to go in the fourth quarter. You know, but his defense and his versatility have been really good. You know, his rebounding has been helpful, you know, at 5.8 per game. He's just Chris Middleton. He's doing the same things he's generally always done. He's actually pretty close to a 50-40-90 right now. I don't know if that would be able to keep up, but he's shooting 48.9% from the field, 40% from three, and 89.4% on free throws. So in general, his numbers have been really good. He just needs to be able to sustain and kind of keep it up. And the Bucks trust him no matter what time in the game, but particularly in the fourth quarter. You know, guys have reiterated over the years how they trust him late in games to step up, and he definitely did that Monday, and I would assume that, you know, he'll be in positions to do that plenty of times throughout the season.
Speaking of guys with gaudy percentages, Malcolm Brogdon, that'll still be a storyline that we talk about a lot over the course of the year, but I think maybe one of the undersold elements of the decision to let Malcolm Brogdon go, to trade him, is the Bucks were big believers in what Dante DiVincenzo could bring to the table, and I think the secret is out on him now. Secret Dante, maybe not as much anymore. He's obviously not producing the volume of numbers, but he's not playing the volume of minutes that Brogdon would have if he had been back, but he sure seems like that piece, you know. He seems like he's capable of filling that role, and it's, I'm sure there's plenty of room for him to grow still. He's still obviously very young, very new to his career here in the NBA, but what have you seen from him? Because right now it feels like the Bucks really, really might have landed on something with DiVincenzo.
Yeah, I mean, he's somebody who has slotted in really, really well and really kind of quickly. I obviously had that injury last year to his heel, where he, you know, missed most of last season. But overall, I think he's been really good. He started in place of Middleton and was able to handle himself really well in that role. Now that he's coming off the bench, he fits well with that bench unit. He and Pat Connaughton have played, you know, really well the past few games. Also, you put them out there with George Hill, and you just have a bunch of guys who are flying around on defense, you know, getting loose balls, getting rebounds, running the floor. It's definitely a group that Mike Budenholzer has liked, especially with their energy. You know, Dante is going out there getting steals, you know, all the time. It's, you know, 1.5 per game doesn't sound like a lot, but it's not like he plays a ton of minutes. You look at his per 36 numbers, and you know he's got 2.6 steals per 36. I mean, that's, you know, that's pretty high level right there. You know, and he just has that energy factor on both ends of the court. You know, whether, you know, he's not just spotting up for threes, but he's also cutting into the lane, finishing inside, driving, kicking out passes, getting offensive rebounds in situations where he really has no business getting them, or at least you would think he had no business getting them. So I think the Bucks knew or hoped that they had someone in DiVincenzo who could grow and progress and fit a little bit more into that backup two guard position, or, you know, or even the two guard position in general. I mean, he and Wes Matthews, you know, basically as a timeshare, have been, you know, not exactly the same as Brogdon, but I think they've been, you know, high quality replacements for what Brogdon was able to bring last year, and they bring different things. Malcolm was a good defender, but not in the same way that Dante is. So you're getting a little bit of a different production, different energy, different skill set, and so far it's been working out well.
He is Matt Velasquez, Milwaukee Journal Sentinel beat reporter covering the Milwaukee Bucks. He's got tons of stuff available to chew through at jsonline.com. He wrote about George Hill this week, sort of 1 year after the Bucks acquired him, how he's been such a perfect fit. So I really encourage you to go read that story, as well as any game recaps, any other additional stories that pop up here in the next few weeks. I'll leave you with this last question, Matt. Buy or sell, just a buy or sell, that the Bucks will be playing for a 20th consecutive victory when the Los Angeles Lakers come to town next week, Thursday.
I'll buy it.
Yes. Love it.
I think that's entirely possible. I don't expect that they would lose to anyone this week. I would be pretty surprised, in fact. And Dallas will be tough, you know, but I think that they'll be able to handle what Dallas is going to throw at him, especially at home. And then, Yeah, I could definitely see a reality in which the Bucks are aiming to become, I think, just the seventh team to reach 20 wins in a row and tie the franchise record against the Los Angeles Lakers at home in a game that I'm sure is nationally televised. I mean, I think that's on TNT at Pfizer Forum. I'm expecting that whatever crowd is there, regardless of the streak, even if they lose the streak before that, you know, playing the Lakers at home, LeBron James, Anthony Davis, Jason Kidd coaching as an assistant.
Jason Kidd. Hello,
as an assistant coach. Just give us all of that. I expect the crowd to be totally geeked up for that game, and I think it'll be a fun one. So if I had to guess, I think they will be going for win number 20 that day. But regardless, it's going to be a good one.
Yeah, for sure. I'm going to sell only because I've just got a weird feeling about this game in Memphis. I know they've only won 7 games. I know they're not a factor, but I don't know. You know how that goes. I mean, they lost twice to the Suns last year. I feel like the law of averages says they're due for one of those weird games, but I would definitely expect them to win their home games leading into that Lakers game. Very interested in seeing it. And I know Bucks fans will be too. We'll probably have one more podcast. We should before that happens. So we'll get updates on how they do this week. Thanks for joining us, Matt Velasquez. Appreciate it. We'll talk to you again next week.
All right. Can't wait.
He is available at Matt Velasquez, Matt_Velasquez on Twitter. You can find me in the same place at JRRADCLIFFE. Don't forget to check us out on Apple Podcasts. Leave us a rating and review, Stitcher, Spotify, any place, you know, the big three, anywhere you get your podcasts. That's where you'll find the Milwaukee Bucks Journal Sentinel podcast. Enjoy this run. It's historic. It's probably going to continue a little bit longer. It's going to be a lot of fun. Thanks for tuning in. We'll catch up with you again soon.